Welcome back. If you just if you're just joining us, then I'm sorry, you just missed out on your opportunity to win an all expense paid trip to sunny California for E3. But don't worry, next hour we'll have another chance for you to win. My name is Cyril Lachelle, and you're listening to This Week in Defunct Games. I'm, of course, joined by Wes Grogan, who is in a calling in from an undisclosed location.
How you doing? I want to say congratulations to Jill Bokenbacher, and I'm looking forward to seeing her at E3.
I am, too. We'll have to meet up, Jill. Anyway,
well, so... you said she's going to be doing all the work for us, right?
That's right. We're going to be sipping Manhattans and just sitting back.
Okay, good.
Yep. All right, so we don't have a whole lot to talk about this week. It's been kind of a slow week for retro news. Maybe people are just waiting until E3 to announce everything. But in the meantime, we do have 2 weeks' worth of retro games to talk about since we didn't do a podcast last week.
Yeah, we're slackers.
Yeah. It just didn't work out schedule-wise. But don't worry, we'll have a podcast this week, and we'll have one next week as far as we can do it. But anyway, I figure that instead of dilly-dallying around, we should just jump right into what came out last week and see our thoughts. We've actually had a string of really good virtual console games, as far as I'm concerned. So,
with a few exceptions, yeah.
I wouldn't even say a few. I'd say maybe one exception.
But we'll see.
Okay, well, let's just jump right into it. And see what we let's start with Street Fighter 2 Turbo, which of course is the second virtual console Street Fighter game currently available. A couple of months ago, Capcom released Street Fighter 2, just the regular version that didn't allow you to play the bosses or whatnot. But Street Fighter 2 Turbo pumps up the speed, and it gives you play control over the bosses and player versus player fights. And this is probably the best of all of the Super Nintendo versions of Street Fighter 2. My only issue, of course, is that you can't play it online, and it is a little different than the arcade version, which you can find, of course, on the Xbox Live Arcade.
I am so tired of Street Fighter 2.
Oh, come on.
I am so tired of it. Between the SSF2THDRBLM, and the Street Fighter 2 and the Street Fighter 2 Turbo and the Street Fighter 2 Turbo for the Xbox Live. And I'm tired of it. Stop releasing these freaking Street Fighter 2s.
Oh, come on. Street Fighter 2 is a great game. I mean, that's like asking someone to stop releasing Pac-Man or something like that. I mean, Street Fighter 2 is great.
And there I disagree with you. Street Fighter 2 is great for its time.
No, Street Fighter 2 is still great.
You and I disagree on how well it's aged. I don't think it has. To me, it's slow.
The original one was slow. The Street Fighter 2 Turbo is a fast-paced game.
But it's still Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, but which is good. I mean, that's like saying that, it's just chess. It's a classic.
Maybe if all of this were spread out a bit more, that'd be fine. But...
So you're not even interested remotely in the Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo HD remix.
That I'm actually somewhat interested in, solely for the fact that they're redoing the artwork. And I liked the artwork originally. That I'm relatively interested in. The problem, again, is that it's the same game, except this time it's Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
Are you not into the Alpha series or any of the other Street Fighters? Or is it just Street Fighter 2?
You know what? We talked about this before. If they were remaking the Street Fighter Alphas, I'd be perfectly okay with it. It's more the fact that over the past couple of months, we've had a lot of Street Fighter 2. And I've kind of had my fill of it.
Oh, I don't know.
I'll be honest. If they released this maybe 2 months from now, I might be more tolerant of it, but...
Well, I say that people should go out and spend the money on it because it is a classic game. Everyone, it's a great two-player game. You don't already have anything like this, or at least the quality of this on the Wii or on the virtual console.
So. Other than Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, but this is a much better version of Street Fighter 2. I don't think people should have bought Street Fighter, the original Street Fighter 2 when it was on there.
That's my point there, is why didn't they release this one first?
Yeah, well, I mean, what, were they going to go backwards?
No, forget the bad ones.
Well, the first one wasn't bad. It's just woefully outdated when you get Street Fighter II Turbo. But I mean,
well, it'd be like porting Mortal Kombat 1 for the Super Nintendo on the Virtual Console. You know, you don't focus on the bad.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. But you know, it's not a bad game.
No, I've kind of had my fill of it, and that's more of it. I think if people are ready for more Street Fighter 2, then they should get this.
But they're putting it on different systems. I mean, it's not like all of these are coming out on the same system. We're getting them on different systems.
No, that's true. And I do think that if people are willing to continue to enjoy Street Fighter 2, then they'll enjoy this one. It's definitely the better version of the two.
All right. Well, maybe we'll just agree to disagree and move on, because next up we have China Warrior, which I think you and I are going to agree on. China Warrior is a classic TurboGrafx-16 game, and I can only imagine that at the time of the release, all the kids playing the game were wowed by the fact that there was this huge, ginormous Bruce Lee-looking character that took up the entire screen.
That actually is true. A lot of the mediocre games at that time hyped how big their characters were. And because they knew the gameplay couldn't carry it. So actually, yeah, that was their big advertising point, was that you've got this guy who takes up like 80% of the screen.
Yeah, and what's worse, though, is that you can't see in front of you, you can barely see in back of you.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as you have a second person on the screen, all hell breaks loose, and it's just... It's not a good game, but it is kind of funny to see how large these characters are.
Yeah, well, it's just watch a trailer of it. Go to YouTube, watch it. It's more fun to watch how pathetic this game is than to actually play it.
No, I definitely agree with you. So maybe we shouldn't talk about that.
I just want to say that, you know, if the Virtual Console offered me $5 to download it, I might think about it.
Yeah. All right, well, next up we have a $10 game, and that is F-Zero X, the Nintendo 64 F-Zero game, which is probably the first true sequel to F-Zero for a Nintendo console. And
I already know we're going to disagree.
We're going to disagree on this one?
I already know.
Okay, what don't you like about F-Zero X?
I hate the controls for the F-Zero series, and I always have.
Really? All of them?
Yes.
But the first game is a phenomenal game. It's an exciting. There was nothing like it at the time.
And the whole right trigger, left trigger thing, and all of that. I never got into it. I want to be able to just steer. I don't want to have to worry about sliding and drifting. I don't know. I never really adopted it. You know, whether it was F-Zero X, whether it's F-Zero on the Super Nintendo, I'm not bothering with the GBA ones.
Are you not into the Wipeout series either for the same reason?
Pretty much, yeah.
Come on.
Well, if I'm steering, I want to steer, you know?
Yeah, but they don't have wheels. So, I mean, it makes sense to put your weight on one side or the other.
So if they don't have wheels, why does it bother them to drive over dirt?
Well, isn't that electromagnetic dirt?
I didn't read through the whole manual. It very well could have been. It very well could have been.
I mean, they have to give you some, you know, some things that slow you down a little bit. I mean, I understand that.
But if it were just strict balls to the wall, maneuvering through the traffic, that kind of thing, I would have enjoyed it a lot more. I mean, you're fighting the track a lot more than you're fighting your opponents.
Yeah, but that's okay. I mean, that's, you know, the courses are neat. I mean, the F-Zero X courses are really, really cool.
I'm not saying the courses are bad, but for me, who don't like who doesn't like the way of the steering, then at that point, I don't want to fight the course.
The only thing I don't like about this version is that I wish that Nintendo would have released the expansion pack.
The expansion
along
pack,
with it.
Yeah.
Japan only Nintendo 64 DD.
Which they easily could have just tacked on to
Absolutely, because that allowed you to make your own courses, and that would have been cool. And not only that, but it would have been cool if you could trade those. But I guess
it'll be another N64 download.
Maybe. I doubt it though. I don't see that happening. I don't know. I wish
maybe they'll just make it pay us another $10 and you get the expansion pack.
So you really, you just,
who knows?
You can't recommend F-Zero X. But I mean, it's currently the best racing game on the Nintendo 64 or on the Virtual Console. And
compared to what?
Well, Victory Run.
Oh wow! And that's a tough competition right there.
And Moto Rotor or whatever it's called.
It's not a bad game. It's just not a game for me.
All right. You know? I think it's worth the $10, and apparently you don't.
If you liked the GameCube Hero, if you liked the Super Nintendo,
so I disagree with that.
It's an improvement over both of them.
I disagree with that a lot. I hated the GameCube version.
Well, I didn't like it either, but the F-Zero is much better.
I think that F-Zero X is better or is on par with the phenomenal Super Nintendo F-Zero, which I still think is one of the better games out there.
See, the F-Zero for the GameCube, I think it was like a beginner's F-Zero. You know, and maybe it'll tempt them enough to get into the F-Zero X, which I think is kind of the pinnacle of the three.
Yeah, okay. Well, I hope to see something wave motion related, or just motion related, not wave motion. Anyway, I hope to see something motion related for the F-Zero series on the Wii. Hopefully soon. Maybe they'll introduce it at this year's E3. Maybe not.
Maybe that's what I could really enjoy.
I don't know. We'll see. Well, let's move on to this week's retro games. We had three Virtual Console games I think all three of them are phenomenal. I think that all three of them are worth downloading. Maybe not phenomenal, but definitely worth downloading.
Yeah, phenomenal I wouldn't say.
Okay. Well, you know, we're mincing words over hyperbole. Let's start with Echo the Dolphin, or I should say Echo the Tides of Time, which is, of course, the sequel to Echo the Dolphin. It was released like a year or two after Echo the Dolphin, and it pretty much does exactly the same thing the original Echo did. Only this time there are some 3D elements and a really crazy end segment that has a lot of aliens.
Yeah, it's weird. But this is not a game where you sit down, you play it for 5 minutes, and then you turn it off.
No, this is something that you really have to play it for hours and sort of memorize your environments and sort of get into sort of the tranquil mood and atmosphere of the game.
Yeah, the graphics for the time were absolutely stellar.
I think the graphics still hold up real well.
Yeah.
I was actually a little surprised how good the game still looks.
See, I haven't seen it on the television in action in a while, but I know even for the time frame that they came out, I mean, there was nothing even close to it.
Yeah, no,
you know, for the fluidity of it and all of that.
The Echo series always reminded me of stuff like, you know, Prince of Persia and Flashback, except underwater.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
And I always really liked that, and I think that there really aren't enough games like this even now. And I think they made the 3D sequel that was way too difficult.
Oh God!
But
yeah, no.
You know, I wish they would just go back and they'd do, you know, some sort of 2D version of this, either on, you know, one of the portable systems.
And kind of like the new Super Echo Brothers.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Cool.
And boy, with that, we better move on.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move on to the Dragon Spirit.
Dragon Spirit, which of course is no relation to Ninja Spirit.
No, but I do like to refer to it as Dragon Hevia Spirit.
Yes, yeah, actually, no, you're not too far off. It is very much basically a remake of that classic game, except this time around, you play a really cool dragon.
Right, and not the Solvaloo.
Now here's the thing, and this will probably get me in trouble, but I like this game a lot, and I like this game mostly because, unlike most shoot 'em ups, you actually care about the character that you play.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the shoot 'em ups you're playing, you know, some nameless spaceship, or even in the case of like Gradius or something where you actually have a name, it doesn't really matter because it has no character.
Yeah, and I love how most of the time you don't even have a name; you're just a ship.
Right. Yeah. But in this one, you play this rather detailed dragon creature that looks really cool and flies
very
over
sympathetic.
It flies over some really cool areas. I mean, there's plenty of really cool environments, you know, with lava and ice and forests and water and all sorts of, you know, dinosaurs and whatnot to blow up.
Yeah.
And it's actually really cool.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed the game just because you could fly over something and say, "Hey, look how cool that is," and then kill it.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's
which I mean, that's what games are all about.
Ah,
yeah, so. I would definitely download this one. You need a little patience with it. It's not going to be the high speed frantic shooters that you know modern ones are. But
right, right. But at the same time, I think that's good because I think that
oh, yeah.
too many of them you're just having to memorize where the bullets are going to be and where the enemies are going to go and
bullet hell. Yeah.
This one you it's not too frustrating, but at the same time it's not too easy. It's a nice balance, I think.
I definitely agree with you there.
And the characters are really neat because you power up your dragon by giving them extra heads, which I always thought was really cool.
Oh yeah, and that's definitely one thing they had over Xevious. It's just the power up abilities and all of that.
Yeah.
The TurboGrafx-16, the PC engine, whatever you want to call it, it was well known for having shooters. If you want to know why. This is one of the reasons for it. It was a relatively unique take, at least for the time frame.
Absolutely.
So I would
still
say,
unique. I mean,
Oh yeah.
We don't see a lot of games like this anymore. And I guess the one closest to this that I can think of is probably Layer, which is coming up.
Yeah.
But even then, I don't know. Well, can't wait to play that.
I wouldn't mind to see a Dragon Spirit 2.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't continue this series.
I would definitely not miss the chance to download the first one.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. Moving
and then
on.
We have Super Mario Brothers USA.
Super Mario Brothers 2, which as it was called in the US. Of course, fans of the series, and well, just gamers in general, probably already know that Super Mario Brothers 2 in the US is not actually a Super Mario Brothers game.
Doki Doki Panic.
Yeah, it's originally Doki Doki Panic, which is a which was a Japanese 2D platformer that was
Doki Doki.
Cool.
Doki Doki.
But,
Doki Doki.
Okay, but
sorry.
Yeah.
I love that term.
Now, when this game first came out, I wasn't a big fan of it. I'll confess. I think there was just something about how different it felt from the other games, and of course, at the time, I didn't realize that it's because. You know, it's not
Mario.
Yeah, it's not really a Super Mario Brothers game. But as the years have gone on, I've started to appreciate this game more and more. I think I think that it's one of those games that now that I can appreciate that, yeah, okay, it's not a Mario Brothers game, so the mechanics in it are completely different. I'm fine with that. I think that it's still a remarkable game, if only because. You know, there are actually some really ingenious level designs. I really like, you know, some of the bosses. The three-headed serpent snake monster is pretty cool. And you know, the mechanics of picking stuff up and throwing it and whatnot, I think is really cool as well.
When the game first came out, it took me a bit to warm up to it, and it wasn't really until the Super Mario All-Stars on the Super Nintendo that I appreciated how good we had it with Super Mario Brothers 2, because if you play the lost levels,
yes,
that
Super Mario Brothers 2.
That game is screwed up. Once you start getting into the random wind levels and all of that, it's just... I mean, we're much better off having our Doki Doki Mario Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. But I just... What I like about... And there are some things that they've actually used in more recent Super Mario Brothers games. I mean, for example,
yeah.
I like the fact that, you know, you can choose from the different characters and all four of them have different abilities.
Yeah, I was all about Toad.
You're all, really? I like the fact that the princess floats. I thought that always made the levels easier.
Yeah, but it always made me feel a bit uncomfortable, too.
Playing as the princess?
Yeah, just sitting there thinking, I'm a pretty little princess.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm not the girly man that you are, so...
I guess not. Jeez. So,
No, I mean, all of them. I mean, the only thing that annoyed me was Luigi's jump.
Yeah, his jump was way too high.
He was so hard to control. And besides, any of them could do the same thing if you just crouched.
Right, right. So, no, when I went back and I played this, which, you know, I go back every few years and I go through it again, and I went back this week to play through it, and I'm always struck by how difficult some of the levels are. And,
oh, God, yeah.
There's that one level that gets me every time where you're supposed to, they're the flying bird creature thing.
Oh, God, I hate
that
level.
And this huge gap. And you're supposed to make it all the way over that thing with the birds, and
uh-huh.
and they, I'm sure there's a pattern to them, but they seem almost in random order.
They've always felt random to me.
And it's just that's so difficult, and I can't imagine doing that without the princess.
Yeah, no, I've done it with Toad. I hope never to do it again with Toad.
If I'm a girly man for playing as the what does Toad say about you?
That I'm short and strong.
And kind of androgynous.
Yeah, and with really bad fashion taste. Just pretty much right. I'm all about androgyny, man. I believe in embracing it.
All right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I like the game. I do.
Yeah, you have to have it on your virtual console. I think this is a required download.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't already own the game, of course. And I would almost argue that if you still have a Super Nintendo, you probably should go out and get the Super Mario All-Stars for about the same amount of money.
Although I'm betting they'll eventually put that on the virtual console as well.
Really? I don't know.
Once they release all of the classic ones, they'll go back and they'll release the All-Star one to double the profit. It's just like they did when they released the Super Nintendo version.
Yeah, but they didn't do that with the Game Boy Advance. I mean, the Game Boy Advance games were, $30 each.
Well, that's because ever since they put up Super Mario Bros. 3, people didn't stop buying it.
Yeah, it's true. And I'm sure that's going to be the same when it comes to the Virtual Console. I'm sure that we'll get that around holiday time, and it's going to be a huge success.
Another required download.
Yeah, and rightfully so, because Super Mario Bros. 3 is the best of the Super Mario Bros. Games.
I don't know. I really liked Yoshi's Island.
Really?
But that wasn't. Yeah, I really liked it.
I wouldn't even put that in like the top 3 or 4.
Well, it's one of those people love it or they hate it.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I don't. I want to like that. I just can't get into it for some odd reason. I think it's the fact that I'm not controlling Mario.
Maybe that's what it is. But I've always enjoyed it.
I don't know.
I don't know. It's just always been my kind of game. So anyway, Xbox Live Arcade had one.
Yeah, so it's the 4th of July, and, of course, that means that we had to have some sort of patriotic, bombs going off,
so
missiles flying high, and so they had two choices.
Did they re-release Boom Boom Rocket?
Yeah, they had three. They could have given us some extra content for Boom Boom Rocket, maybe some patriotic themes, or they could have given us Bomberman, which, of course, is coming out this month.
Yeah.
Or they could have gone and then done what they did, which I hate to say is Missile Command, the classic 1980 Atari arcade game that I just could never, ever get into.
Well, I mean, ultimately, there's one thing that they cannot give us on the Xbox Live Arcade, and that's a nice, big, heavy trackball.
Yeah, that's absolutely the problem. And I didn't even like the game with the trackball. So
really?
No, I've never been a big fan of the game, and it feels like the control is somewhat random, and it doesn't seem as well defined as a lot of those other early classic arcade games.
Do you remember the trackball football game?
Yeah.
That thing would cause injuries. But no, I overall I know what you're saying.
Go ahead.
There's a reason. Unlike the Prince of Persia Classic, there's a reason why they had to make the graphics so pretty for Missile Command, and that's to hide the extremely shallow gameplay.
Yeah. And to be fair, this actually does come with both the original version and the new evolved look.
Which you already know I think should be required for all of these games.
Yeah. But I mean, to be fair, there are some games that just don't need it. I mean, I don't think I need Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 to look any better than it does.
Oh, no. I'm saying if they enhance the graphics, they should have the old one that you can go back to. I'm not saying if it's the unenhanced graphics, they have to enhance it.
Right.
But if they tweak it or if they play with it, then you have to have the original version, I think.
Yeah. Now, I played through the evolved version of this. I got the review code for it and had a good time. And I'll admit, I like this version of it a little bit more than I liked the classic one. And you're right, it does have shallow gameplay. But just maybe it's just sitting down with it and actually playing it on a console made a little bit of a difference for me, because I just wasn't a big fan of the arcade cabinet game. However, the new graphics, they're really nice, but it it changes the gameplay in kind of a bizarre way, I found.
How do you mean?
Well, because you aim where you want the missile to go, and then you see this sort of bolt of lightning like thing that doesn't necessarily go exactly where you want it to, and maybe it's just the look of it doesn't go, because it always ended up, the missile ended up where it was supposed to go, but it seemed a little slower, and it seemed a little it didn't seem as precise, and you couldn't always tell how far of a radius the missile explosions had. So it seemed a little more difficult in that regard, but then again, I didn't play it that long, and I was never a huge fan of the original. But this is $5, and it does come with both the original and the evolved. But it also, I gotta mention, it also comes with something called Throttle Monkey.
Oh yeah.
This is you can play this with both the evolved and the classic version.
And best of luck.
Yeah, Throttle Monkey is insane. It's almost as if you take speed beforehand, because the entire thing is it's the speed set all the way up and the difficulty set all the way up.
Yeah.
And this is where you really need a trackball, because your control, the analog stick is, the aimer is completely uncontrollable with the analog stick. It's absolutely terrible, and I don't understand exactly how they're expecting anybody to do anything with this mode.
But, there'll be somebody out there who does.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
The 80 million point Geometry Wars player or something.
But I think Geometry Wars is a much more addictive game. I think that's
well,
the thing.
You can't go into Missile Command expecting to spend an hour on it. I mean, it's I want to spend 10 minutes playing a game and then get back to work kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they priced it at the lowest, point.
Yeah, it's only $5.
On the same hand, it's not going to last you. I mean, it might be something that every few months you go back to, and if you're looking for that, then great, download it. But
yeah, I would have preferred they give us Bomberman.
You'll get your Bomberman.
I'm sure that'll be probably next week while I'm in Los Angeles.
Probably.
Thanks,
guys. And I'll be sure to mock you.
I'll be playing
then
it there.
I'll be home and you won't. So
right, yeah. But
yeah, those nice sticky controllers, that'll be a lot of fun. I'm so envious.
I don't think it'll be sticky this year. I think there won't be that many people there.
Well, take your handy wipes just in case.
No, it'll be better this year.
I think it'll be a whole lot better. That's one thing that I don't think anybody's going to miss, is the sticky, ugly controllers. Where you want to put on latex just to be able to try the game. Yeah, I don't think anybody will be missing that.
Yeah, I definitely. I'll have to. We'll have another podcast. Well, actually, no. We'll record another podcast before I leave, which is going to be interesting because, we're going to have to record it early.
Yeah.
But in the meantime,
it'll be 3 days in advance.
Yeah, we're going to have to do it on like Sunday or Monday.
So, we're playing with time.
Yeah, but it will go up on Thursday, which will be interesting because.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see.
We'll work it out.
It will,
have faith
yeah.
in us.
Yeah, that we'll work it out. All right. Well,
actually,
I think
right after we're done recording this one, we're going to record the one for next week. And we're just going to make up titles.
Yes. Yeah.
So I was really surprised to see Lords of Thunder coming out. Yeah.
Absolutely. And can you believe Conker's Bad Fur Day finally made it to the Nintendo 64?
I'm really major credit to Rare for that one. I'm not sure they needed to have Carnage Rally come out, though.
And can you believe Sin and Punishment? Anyway, so.
Oh, God. Rise of the Robots. There's a pointless game for you.
Taboo. Watch, all these games will come out.
Oh, yeah, and then we'll cry.
It would behoove Nintendo not to release anything. There you go. Make us work for it.
There you go. Yeah.
All right. Well,
that way we won't take it for granted.
Absolutely. Well, we're about the half-hour mark, so I think we're done with the first half of this podcast. We still have quite a bit more. We're going to talk about Wes's article that's going up tomorrow, and that's going to be a history of violence. We'll be right back with that in just a few moments.
You know what I think we ought to do?
What should we do?
Let's go out to the lobby and get ourselves a snack.
That sounds good. I haven't eaten today. So let's do that, and we'll reconvene in just a couple of minutes. Welcome back to Radio Free Gaming Presents This Week in Defunct Games. My name is Cyril Lachelle, and of course I'm joined in an undisclosed location by Wes Grogan, who's calling in.
Yeah, that was one good hot dog.
Yes. We're of course doing this on the 4th of July, so there's explosions going on outside and a heat wave in my area, which might
Cyril, be. I don't think those are fireworks, man. You might want to duck.
Yeah. So, we just finished up recording all about 2 weeks worth of retro games, and so we should move on to what you have coming out. We have is this your third History of Gaming article?
This would be the third one. Yeah, focuses on the violence in video games, which pretty much was fired by the whole Manhunt 2 crap.
Absolutely. I mean, we got this right up because there's so much controversy about Manhunt 2, and we figure that if you're going to pontificate about Manhunt 2, then you know what
Wait, pontificate?
Am I using that wrong?
No, you used it fine, but the word pontificate, I've never heard anyone use that word.
Really?
That was truly impressive, man.
Oh, well.
Wow.
Should I dumb it down for the kids?
No, keep going, man. Hey, I'm impressed.
All right. If you're going to talk the talk about Manhunt 2, then you should know the history of violence and all this sort of stuff. So that's what we assigned Wes to go ahead and give us a few hundred words about the violence, the history of violence, and well, that's what you did. So Wes, can you tell me a little bit about where violence comes from?
Well, I think it's the innate nature of man that comes out from the id and expresses itself through the ego.
So what you're saying is that violence is not new to video games, that we've had violence all throughout our history of civilizations.
I think I remember that from my history classes, yeah. I could be wrong.
So how is it different that we have violence in video games?
Well, it's the latest scapegoat. I mean, you look at movies when they first came out, and they were the spawn of the devil, or comic books, or rock and roll music,
sure,
or television.
Violence?
Video games are the latest scapegoat. You know, it's the latest thing where people are saying, oh, it's going to ruin our children.
Well, hasn't
you know,
it?
But, hasn't everything ruined our children in one way or another?
Well, I mean, certainly you would argue that violent crimes and whatnot amongst children is on the rise, is it not?
Have dropped over the past 12 years? Yeah, that's true.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Well,
sorry.
I'm sure that we can find something bad.
They certainly tried when they brought him in front of Congress.
Absolutely. So let's talk about some of the early violent video games. Obviously, all video games, even the like early 8-bit games, were really, really violent. Even Mario Brothers is a violent game.
Oh, you can go back to the late 70s, very early 80s, even before 8-bit. There was a racing game called Death Storm, I think it was, where you had to run down these little people on the street with your car. And, you know, it goes all the way back to the very beginning.
So how is it different? What happened in the 90s to make this all change?
It started looking better. There was less imagination involved, and there was more having it be right there in front of you. You go back and play Deathstorm, where it's a blip running over a blob, and you compare that to, say, Mortal Kombat, there's a big difference.
So it was Mortal Kombat that sparked this outrage.
Not just Mortal Kombat. It was really the 16-bit in general, where the graphics just really got to the point that parents started to be able to identify with the characters. And once the parents and the adults started identifying with it, that's really where it all went downhill.
Right, but I mean, Mortal Kombat was kind of the scapegoat and the catalyst for this whole thing.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat and Tom Zito were really the two scapegoats.
Right, and so for all the people out there that may not recognize the name Tom Zito, shame on you, but what did he do?
Oh, God, he was responsible for at least 80% of the Sega CD games. In the mid-80s, he came up with the idea of having games on videotape. And it didn't work, so he shelved everything. And then once Sega CD came out, he pulled it all out again and shopped it around. And originally, he was going to put them all out for the Super Nintendo CD. So if you ever wondered if the Super CD would be better, no, it wouldn't. the Nintendo PlayStation would not have been good at all. But the main game he's known for is Night Trap and Sewer Shark.
And now, Night Trap, where did Night Trap come up with? Now, he originally wanted it to be based on some horror movie, right?
Yeah, he was basically doing a spoof of the vampire movies, and it had Dana Plato in it. It was made in the mid-80s, and it was basically this really campy, horrible spoof where you... it's a completely voyeuristic game, too. You play this like security guy watching through the cameras, and you have to release these booby traps to capture these neonate vampires dressed in black stockings who have to, like, you know, use equipment to get the blood out. It's bizarre. But
now, this is off topic. This has nothing to do with violence, obviously, but when I think of Night Trap, when I look at that, I'm constantly reminded of the show on CBS. I know it's in other countries called Big Brother, where you can actually go on to the internet and subscribe, and you can switch between the rooms and actually watch all these different feeds depending on what, and it just, the only thing that's missing is you can't push a button and then, you know, trap these stupid contestants, which
do like a Rube Goldberg trap on it, yeah,
which would have been awesome.
Now that would have, I would have subscribed at that point, yeah. But no, there's no doubt that the idea came from that. I mean, it's extremely voyeuristic, and the ironic part is that there's really no actual violence. I mean,
right.
It's not accidental that I compare it to Rube Goldberg. I mean,
no, absolutely. I mean,
if staircase lifts up and they fall down it.
Right. If anything, the violence is kind of cartoony. It's
oh yeah.
I mean, yeah. You trap them. You're not, you know, decapitating people or anything like that. I mean, if you let the girls die, because, you know, let's face it, it is sort of in the spirit of a dead teenager movie, as Roger Ebert.
Oh yeah,
would say.
Right down to the music video.
Right. Yes. Where, I mean, you know, you essentially have a bunch of you know, slutty girls that are in, you know, revealing clothing. And, you know, it's always the ones that are the sluttiest and the most rebellious that end up dying first. The ones that will go out and smoke. They're the ones that die first.
In this case, they're not even doing that.
Right.
They're pretty well clothed. They're not doing anything morally questionable. I mean, it's...
But now, when Congress got a hold of this, when one-time Democratic Senator Joseph Lieberman... When he got a hold of this, he claimed that there was a bunch of stuff. There was rape, and there was you know, there was all sorts of beheadings and you know, ultra violence, the like we had never seen. And since these were, you know, real people that we were quote unquote controlling, that this just changed the equation of video games altogether.
Well, once somebody becomes convinced that something exists, there's no changing their mind. David Grossman, who's another anti-video game person along the same lines as Jack Thompson, once said that the Army had a Nintendo simulator, which they've never had. But once that word gets out there, you can't convince anybody otherwise.
Sure, sure. In this particular case,
he was looking for the ratings. He was looking to get, you know, the attention of the American people. And a lot of people think Nintendo had something to do with all of it happening in the first place.
Now, to be fair, the Army has used video games in the past, and this is one of those misconceptions that people seem to have, where they say, and you hear Jack Thompson say this all the time, whereas if you know if the Army is using these video games, then it must be some sort of training, you know, it must be able to train you to do, you know, to kill people and to snipe better and all this stuff. However,
and they forget the game is always modified.
Right, and not only that, but they're not using the game to do that. They're not using the game to represent better, you know, shooting. What they're doing is they're using the game to explain and to show in practical terms how to, you know, do squad base, how to to maneuver, how to make sure and always, you know, cover your peers and friends and co-soldiers. You know, they're not doing it to train them to kill better. That's something they do with target practicing in real life. They use this as squad mechanics for the most part.
Well, Nintendo has never worked with the American Army in any way, shape, or form. I mean, they're a Japanese company. Why would they?
Right.
The first known instance of a machine being converted to Army use was Battlezone, actually, with Ed Log, who did the actual conversion for the Army for it to fit the Abrams tank. Hmm. It's been around forever, but that's not what people want to hear about.
No, of course not.
You know, they want to hear about how it affects the children, and the fact of the matter is, even when the Army does have something set up with it, it's always heavily modified. I mean, you look at the Army version of Full Spectrum Warrior versus, you know, the version that was released to the public. There's a huge difference between the two.
So after the 16-bit era, where did video game violence go from there? I mean, we obviously got towards the end of the 16-bit era into the 32-bit era, we got ratings, and so did that give them the green light to be as violent as possible?
Well, yes and no. There was no legal requirement for the ratings. I could put out a game today and sell it online tomorrow, but no retailer is going to sell it without the ratings. It's a self-policing aspect, exactly the same way as the movies do it.
Sure.
Exactly the same way. That's brilliant. I'm a genius. But it's the same way.
You didn't come up with the rating.
No. There you go. But you know, they borrowed a lot from the way that the movies do it. It's self-regulating. And if you push it too far, like Manhunt 2 is experiencing right now, if you go AO, then you're not going to get sold. AO being adults only, of course. Then you're not going to have anybody who's willing to sell it. You might be able to set up your own little store, but
wouldn't even be able to do that because the Nintendo and Sony have already come out and said that they wouldn't license this game, and if you don't get that, then you don't have the codes essentially that will allow you to actually start up the game, or to you know the gate that allows you to play the game. So I do think about that. I think that aspect of it does seem like there's a bit of censorship there where, you know, you're not actually allowed.
Yeah, the only completely uncensored platform is still the PC.
Sure.
I mean, anything can be put out on the PC, and
to be fair, one has to wonder if Microsoft is trying to change that a little bit with their Games for Windows initiative.
Oh, of course they are, but no developers are going for it.
Sure, sure.
Except Shadowrun, and we've seen how well that's worked out.
Well, now that brings up a different point. Shadowrun is an M-rated game, as is Grand Theft Auto and Gears of War. Do you think that the M rating is kind of just a catch-all for everything? Because, I mean, you know, if you look at Shadowrun, there's no way that can even compare remotely to, you know, the likes of Gears of War with their chainsaw gun, and, you know, Grand Theft Auto, where you're killing cops and where you're, you know, doing all sorts of other violent acts on a per minute basis.
What a lot of people don't understand is that the people who rate Manhunt 2 aren't the same people who rate Gears of War, aren't the same people who rate Shadowrun. For each game, they get a select group of volunteers. Sure. And have them watch a videotape of the game. It's not even the game itself, it's just a videotape of it. And they have a list of the best and the worst in it, and that's what they base the ratings off of. So, you know, a lot of people want to compare, well, this is a lot different than that game, but you can't really do that. It's different people for each one.
Okay.
At least in theory. But I think in a lot of ways it is a catch-all. I think they need to go back and redefine, as the movie industry has had to do several times, really redefine what requires for what rating. I definitely think that's required. They've lost their focus on what is an M, what is a T, you know.
Yeah, no, I can see your point, but it seems like there should be some differences there. We should, you know, Shadowrun, you know, perhaps maybe should be teen or something like that, and it just feels like it's just the catch-all, and the fact that there isn't that one step higher, and then, you know, there is, but there really isn't, because you can't put a game out with that, you can't sell the game and whatnot. It just seems like the ESRB is broken by default.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, NC-17 is the closest comparable, and again, good luck getting a movie put out with that.
Right, yeah, and you can't sell that, and, you know, I mean, you can't get that into Blockbuster, you can't get that into theaters.
Right. So, I mean, that's pretty comparable. I don't know that they're broken by default. I think that they've tried... I don't know. On one hand, they can't complicate the system too much more. On the other hand, games tend to get bumped up that shouldn't be bumped up. Games like Halo 2, games like you said, Shadowrun, whatever. I definitely agree. I think they're put M, mainly because of the fact that the online can't be controlled. And to me, that's completely wrong. You know, you get a disclaimer saying online experience may vary, and...
Yeah, but, I mean, let's face it, all the online stuff is essentially AO.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think these games are being bumped up for that purpose. I can't prove it, of course, it's just my theory, but I suspect that's what's happening, and I don't agree with that, but...
But back to the history of it. Now, everybody has tried, But it seems like none of this seems to go anywhere. I mean, you know, Manhunt 2 has gotten the AO, which, you know, we all... All right, let me start that again. It made the thing where it said that you weren't... Okay, I mean, we already know that... But back to the history of it, we know all about, you know, how Manhunt is getting the AO rating and whatnot, but I mean, it seems like nothing ever seems to happen with, you know, these things. I mean, we certainly saw Doom and Grand Theft Auto and whatnot blamed right after Columbine, but nothing seemed to come of that. Am I wrong with that?
No, you're not wrong, but a lot of that has to do with the IDSA, the... Interactive Digital Software Association. It's the ESA now. But after the hearings with Congress, they created this unifying force, basically, which gives, like, you know, a unified front in case of issues such as that. And again, they have a lot of say over what should or shouldn't be presented in a video game, or, you know, how they're marketed, etc. It's just a good way for the industry itself to govern itself, and if they're called up in front of a hearing or whatever, it was Doug Lowenstein for a while. I don't remember who it is now.
I forget the guy's name, but it's someone who worked, and this troubles me a little bit, but it's somebody that worked on the Bush administration, isn't it?
Oh, God, that's scary. But he's the one that goes out, and he's the one that represents the entire industry when he's
right.
And that's prevented a lot of the miscommunication and the problems and all of that.
Okay.
So they haven't had nearly the problems that they used to have. There was another hearing, I guess a few years later, and I mean they couldn't pin them down. And I talked about that in the article, but they couldn't pin, you know, the way that they used to. It couldn't be one against the other or anything like that.
Now you think that you seem to be under the mindset that the violent video games are actually good.
I'm not saying they're good, I'm just saying I don't think they're bad.
Okay.
To me, there's a difference there. I think for some kids, they can actually serve as, you know, something else to do. I think if every game were lovey-dovey happy, then they would all be boring.
Sure.
I think culture's definition of violence itself is entirely skewed. Super Mario Brothers isn't considered to be a violent game at all. Why? Right. You're slaughtering all kinds of things in there. I think that we can't define whether or not the violence is good until we define the violence itself. And, you know, studies have shown that it doesn't really make a difference.
Sure.
And I know I played violent games growing up, and I turned out to be relatively decent.
Absolutely. And now, do you think there's some sort of hypocrisy involved here? Because, I mean, you know, we have, you know, Shadowrun, like I said, rated M, but at the same time, the two Call of Duty games, Call of Duty 2 and 3, those are rated teen.
Yeah.
And
no, there's I don't understand that at all.
I can only surmise that has something to do with maybe the fact that it's based off of a historical event or whatnot. And we seem to feel that when there's war involved, that, you know, violence is okay. You know, we're completely against murder and killing and whatnot. Yet, you know, we love the fact that, well, or at least early on, we loved the fact that we were going to war in a couple of different countries. Granted, it wasn't exactly that we were going to war against, you know, Canada or Mexico, but, you know, somebody that you know, we can directly see, for example. But, you know, when we ship our troops halfway around the world and we, you know, we kill hundreds of thousands of people, including hundreds of thousands of innocent people, we don't seem to have a problem with that, at least not initially.
Yeah, the idea that you could walk up in Call of Duty 3 and admire the German soldier's mustache before shooting him between the eyes,
yeah,
that's not really a key game to me, but it's exactly right. We need to define what we consider to be violent and what we don't, and we need to stick behind it.
Absolutely.
And that's a cultural thing, and that's the ESRB. Both of them together need to do it.
And do you think
there's a reason?
Go ahead.
There's a reason why each country has its own rating system.
Do you think there's a generational difference, too? Like, what you know, a year or what, 10 years from now will probably be different than what it is now or what it was 10 years earlier.
Absolutely. It's hard to find anybody in yours and my generation who don't at least have some understanding of the video games themselves.
Yeah.
Even if they didn't grow up playing them, they're aware of them.
Absolutely.
And I think that's going to make all the difference in the world. My father's an exception because he played, you know, the games with me. When I was growing up, but for the most part, his generation doesn't have nearly the understanding. I mean, even the computer is this big magical beast, you know.
Well, it does float above the ground in my apartment. So,
oh really? Wow, you got the upgrade. I've got to get that upgrade.
It weighs. I mean, that wastes a lot of energy, though.
Well, you know, who cares? I mean, it's not. We're not going to run out until after we're dead, right? We don't need that stinking ozone layer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I suppose that actually, you know, indirectly brings up the fact that a lot of these games that are just deemed as violent will probably at some point, and maybe even right now, have some social value and meaning and things to say about society in general. I mean, Grand Theft Auto is just a violent game, but at the same time, it does have a lot of jokes and a lot of comments about society.
There's a lot about the culture, but yeah. Yeah, and on top of that, you know, the games that we look at now, we talk about, I mean, you go back and you look at, you know, classic Alice Cooper music, and it's not that bad.
No, of course not.
You know, especially compared to current gangster stuff or whatever. But they're still built around the culture, they're still built around concepts that people can identify with, otherwise they wouldn't work. So I think that they'll continue to be relevant for a good long time, and I think we'll eventually come to terms with it, like we have books or movies or, you know, anything else.
Well, I know that video games are the current whipping boy for the politicians, but, you know, it wasn't that long ago that it was movies also. I remember during, was it the 96 election with Bob Dole? Where it may even have been before that, where it was around that time where he released a list of movies that were culturally or that were bad for the culture, bad for society, and the list of movies included that he thought were bad were movies like Pulp Fiction, and stuff like that. Whereas he was fine with One of the movies he thought was good for society was True Lies, which was, of course, that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Oh,
where,
God, yeah.
He kills a small army.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, and I, if I recall correctly, True Lies was a was a silly comedy, and it, all the violence in it was pretty cartoony. But it, and I think it was rated PG-13. But the fact that he kills in that, if you really look at it, he kills at least 100 or 200 people.
And wasn't that the one where Jamie Lee Curtis was looking really hot?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's PG-13. Right.
But in Pulp Fiction, there were maybe eight or nine different people that get killed, except that the difference is that I suppose one could argue they're a little bit more gruesome. And we look at them longer. Like, for example, when he kills the or when he accidentally shoots the guy in the head, spoiler alert, towards the middle of the movie, they dwell on that for kind of a good half hour because they have to go and meet up with someone to clean it up.
I just a note, I think you give the spoiler alert before the spoiler.
Sorry.
It's okay. Just the
movies are
reference.
Like 15 years old.
No, there's a statute of limitations on spoilers, definitely.
No, there definitely is. I mean, it's ridiculous. There's, you know, if you haven't seen Pulp Fiction by now, then what the hell are you doing?
Oh, and in Sixth Sense, he's dead.
Yes.
So, just to get that out of the way, too, for the listeners. It's after the Columbine, movies like Matrix and whatnot were brought up as well.
And Marilyn Manson.
Movies, yeah, movies, music, video games, anything that children enjoy are always going to be targeted.
Yeah.
There's just no way around it. You know, even comic books are still being brought up, so.
Now, this isn't really part of your article, but do you think that that at some point video games that are sort of based off of these real-life events will be relevant or will be accepted as a real art form, much like, you know, you can do a documentary about Columbine, for example. Michael Moore did one, looking at a lot of different aspects of that day and what led up to it. But you get a lot of controversy when you make a game like Super
Columbine
RPG,
yeah,
or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
That was really controversial. Do you suspect that we're ever going to see a time when, and this of course has nothing to do with the rating system, but it is, you know, about violence. Do you think we're going to get to that point where we can actually look at these things sort of as adults and not have to kowtow to the feeling that, you know, maybe these things are going to be played by kids?
Yeah, see, it's really going to take a maturation of the public eye, and that's going to take our generation really, you know, taking over the country, which, I mean, it'll happen. The old ones are going to die.
Absolutely.
That's pretty much what it's going to take. You look at JFK Reloaded. You know, and that was an event that happened, 40 years ago. And even now it's still
the case. But do you think that there's a bit of a difference there? Because in that, they aren't really explaining anything. They aren't putting that even in context. They're kind of just putting that out there almost to just shock you so that you can, what Lee Harvey Oswald did or did not do. And whereas I think that what Super Columbine RPG tried to do was to
get you in their heads,
to put it into context. And, you know, I played through a bit of Super Columbine RPG, and, you know, it's not the greatest game of all time, but what it seems like they're trying to do, at least, is, you know, at least give you the context and give you the feeling of what was going through their heads beforehand, and then, you know, and then half the game is those characters in hell.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree that there's a big difference between the two. But that was, you know, half of my point is that I think the approach is everything to do with it. And first we have to be open for that approach to be made to begin with. And we're not there yet.
Yeah.
You know, you can do you could probably get away with doing a movie, but you could get away with doing a comic book on 9/11 before you could ever do a video game.
Well, they already did that.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, when you you know, Rockstar has already come out and said that because they're essentially in New York City for Grand Theft Auto 4, they're not going to have airplanes. They don't want people to recreate that sort of thing.
Which is unfortunate.
Right. I think that, you know, and that, and I was completely against all of the censoring and all of the things that were edited and taken out of a lot of games right after September 11th.
Well, movies too. Spider-Man had to be delayed so they could digitally remove the World Trade Center, which I'm like, you know, since when are we embarrassed by it?
Right, exactly. And you know, I'm somewhat happy that artificial intelligence, the Steven Spielberg movie, you know, that came out right before September 11th, that when that went to DVD, which was after September 11th, they didn't edit out the World Trade Center and that.
Well, historically speaking, you remove references to that which you're embarrassed by. So I never understood why we were removing the World Trade Center from everything.
Absolutely. I mean, we wouldn't remove the World Trade Center from the logo of Woody Allen's Manhattan.
Right.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and I don't think we should be embarrassed of the World Trade Center.
No, I don't think we should be embarrassed by the violence in our games either. It's a matter of nature. I mean, beyond anything else, it's a matter of nature.
But do you think part of this is that these companies, these game companies, aren't willing to stand up and fight for what they believe in?
We're getting back to your pet peeve now.
Right,
but,
absolutely.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. I think that it needs to be a lot more proactive instead of reactive.
It seems like if they had, years ago, if they had come, you know, with the facts, and they said, look, you know, this is nothing new. Here are the facts. Look at, you know, the crime rates going down. You know, that would have made everything a little easier for us years later.
It certainly would have established a much stronger foundation. Yeah. No, I definitely agree. And at this point, they need to go, you know, balls to the wall, gung-ho, and get the word out there.
Absolutely.
You know, but first of all, it's not just 12-year-olds playing these games. And second of all, even then, the 12-year-olds are exposed to worse in other media, and that's okay, too, if the parents choose it.
Absolutely. I mean, I read a study recently that the average age of the game buyer is, what, 28?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's the idea that it's just for kids is ridiculous. You wouldn't say that about music, and you wouldn't say that about movies.
Yeah. You wouldn't expect the same person to go see The Color of Night that goes to see Aladdin. You know?
Right.
And if they do, cool, that's great, but
unless they take their child to Aladdin.
Right, and you expect it to, you know, have that. And the other thing is that the parents take the time to learn what the movie's about.
Absolutely.
They don't take the time to learn what the game's about, which is a whole other topic right there.
So, alright, before we end this, I want to bring up one thing, which is Nintendo. They get a lot of good press for a lot of the good things that they do. But I think one of the bad things that they've done is that when it came to the original Mortal Kombat, as we all know, they weren't willing to show they made Acclaim, which was the one publishing the game at the time.
Right.
They made them censor, if you will, to edit out the graphic violence, a lot of the, you know, all the blood. And at least half of the fatalities.
Yeah.
Whereas, as soon as the Genesis version started to sell better, they realized that this, from a financial point of view, is a bad, bad idea. So they said, "Hey, let's put blood back into Mortal Kombat 2," and then it sold well.
They also got a lot of complaints from parents about censoring their kids' games. Believe it or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the sidestepping, the waffling, you know, Nintendo especially. I mean, who would have thought they'd ever even consider Manhunt 2 to be on their system?
Right, and I almost applaud them for that. I mean, but at the same time, is the stuff in Manhunt 2 really worse than Resident Evil 4? Now, I know that most of Resident Evil 4 isn't really that bad. However, if you've been through at least the first, not even hour of the game, and you've been introduced to the chainsaw guy.
Yeah.
I mean, the scene where you're getting your head chopped off, or not even chopped off, but sawed off, is ridiculously violent.
Not even that, but when you get to the exploding heads with the tentacles coming out and all of that. I mean, I absolutely agree with you. It's horrendous. Great game. Phenomenal game.
Do you,
but...
think, do you think that Nintendo is kind of breathing a sigh of relief right now about Manhunt 2?
I would bet so.
Because, yeah. I mean, I think they knew what they were getting themselves into, but at the same time, I have to wonder that, you know, they got the press that the system was going to have these mature games, so, you know, yeah. People out in forum land can say, hey, it's not for kids, they were going to release this.
And if they had to stand behind it, they would have.
Right. But now, with the AO, they have an excuse to say, yeah, okay, it's not coming out of the system, but hey, we tried.
And the fact that they and Sony both put out the press release at about the same time saying we don't allow AO games in our system, I think that saved them a lot. If it had just been them standing there alone saying, no, we won't allow an AO game on our system, then, you know, it would have been a lot worse for them.
Absolutely.
But, it just, overall, it's still going to be interesting to watch for a bit, see what happens.
Well, I'm interested to see if the game will actually be... we'll be at E3 next week, or if we'll learn anything about the future of the game, because I still suspect we're going to see that game within the next month or two.
Well, you'll keep us updated.
I will definitely do that. And I think that, you know, we got right back to Manhunt 2, which is sort of the reason that this article came about. So we've kind of gone full circle. And
is it time to go?
So I think that, you know, we've been at this for about an hour.
You're tired of me.
Well, I got more stuff to do. We're on deadline here at the the office. We have another week's worth of articles to get up tonight. So I think that I'm going to pass this over to the people that do the next hour. But don't worry, everybody. Next hour you'll be able to win another all expense paid trip to E3. That's happening
because
next week.
Because we need a cameraman.
That's absolutely true. So we'll hopefully you'll win. Stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, make sure that you do come back next week. We will have a podcast for you, even though it's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
But it will be E3 related, which will be fun. So we'll see you next week. For Wes Grogan, my name is Cyril Lachelle. You've been listening to This Week in Defunct Games. If you have any questions or comments, I suggest you head on over to www.defunctgames.com, or you can email me at loser@defunctgames.com. We'll see you next week.
Everyone, take care, and someone get me out of this stupid tent, would you?
Well, yes. Well, and hopefully, and because of the sound quality, we'll hopefully have Wes back to his regular disclosed location next week. Until then, keep smiling.